Have you wondered about living elsewhere in your retirement? Well, we have, almost daily. No, it's not a simple decision, especially when two people are involved.
Hi, this is
Gil
and Gene of Retire There, a podcast about retirement destinations. We live in Brooklyn, New York. Having grown up and worked in this area of the country, we're hoping to relocate when we're both retired. For us, it's the weather, the chaos, the noise, and the yearning to be near nature and not within 3 feet of human beings.
That's right. In February 2020, we embarked on our journey to find that special place. We spent a week in Winter Park, Florida, which is beautiful, but something said it wasn't for us. As we were planning for the next trip, the pandemic arrived. Gene then gave birth.
I gave birth?
To this podcast. With so many baby boomers retiring, many must be relocating. Why not connect with and learn from them?
Here's a little background about us.
I'm Asian, born in Brazil, and grew up in Flatbush, Brooklyn. I'm an engineer turned attorney turned podcaster. I recently retired from a university career practicing higher education law. I love the academic environment, but it was time to do something else. I no longer have to set an alarm, drive in BQE traffic, or work with people who don't always share the same principles. Ooh, did I just say that? You bet I did. I traded all that in to binge crime dramas into the wee hours just a little bit, to develop the podcast, to volunteer, practice metalsmithing, tackle our possessions. No regrets so far, Gene.
I'm not Asian, and as Gil mentioned, I'm not retired. I'm just plain tired. Born and raised in Long Island, New York, a place I always wanted to leave. I'm a law librarian working in a court who loves his job, but we're retired by the time we select our ideal location. We will be speaking to folks from across the street to across the globe who have moved to their dream venues and more. So please stay tuned and remember, if you know anyone who has moved anywhere for retirement, let us know.
Thank you. Bonjour. Today we meet Beth Haslam about living in rural Toulouse, specifically Tarn-et-Garonne. And I know I'm mangling the language, so I will stop doing that. In France, of course, with her husband Jack and their myriad of furry family members. The couple purchased a French domain, which will be defined further during our conversation, though it differs from a chateau, which is akin to a castle. So Toulouse, the capital of France's southern Occitanie region in the department of Haute-Garonne, and I'm not sure if I should be rolling my R's, although you're close to Spain, so okay. The city is bisected by the Garonne River and sits near the Spanish border. It's known as La Ville Rose, the Pink City, due to the terracotta bricks used in many of its buildings. Its 17th century Canal du Midi, which is 150 miles long, links the Garonne to the Mediterranean Sea, which is about 93 miles away, and can be traveled by boat, bike, or on foot. As of 2021, it is the fourth largest city in France, after Paris, Marseille, and Lyon, with over 500,000 inhabitants within the city boundaries, and its metropolitan area has about a population of 1.5 million inhabitants. Toulouse is the central city of one of the 22 metropolitan councils of France. Statistics show it is still rapidly growing. And while we are talking about an hour or so north of Toulouse, we want to give you some highlights of a city that many of us have heard of. So Toulouse is also the center of the European aerospace industry, with the headquarters of Airbus. Remember, many of us know about the Airbus A30. It's a humongous aircraft. The SPOT satellite system, and that's S-P-O-T. I will leave out the full name and use the acronym. ATR and the Aerospace Valley. It hosts the CNES's Toulouse Space Center, which is the largest national space center in Europe. But also on the military side, the newly created NATO Space Center of Excellence and the French Space Command and Space Academy. Wow, Folks, I had to add all that in because I came from the aerospace industry and I did not know any of this. All right. This is little Bumpkin Gillen living in New York, which you would think is a very metropolitan area. And it is. But that doesn't make me very metropolitan, folks. Having worked as a mechanical engineer in the United States aerospace industry, I should have. But these days, you all know what I'm up to. I am still tinkering, but just not with machines. Okay, Gene, tell us about our guests.
Beth grew up on a farm estate in Wales and was mostly seen messing around with her beloved animals. After a university education in York, Beth worked as a human resources executive in a UK-based multinational corporation. These days, Beth is occupied as never before, raising and saving animals, writing, and embracing everything their corner of rural France has to offer. Beth has written 5 best-selling books in her Fat Dogs and French Estates series and is currently editing Fat Dogs and French Estates Part 6,
wow,
which will be published later in 2024. Last year, Beth published her series prequel, Fat Dogs and Welsh Estates. It's another bestseller. She shares tales about her remarkable upbringing. As Beth reflects, it isn't everyone who ends up living in a castle. Jack was born and brought up in the UK and had a university education. As Beth describes him, he is horrifically intelligent, Mensa ratings, but he has diplomacy skills of a gnat.
I love that.
He has been an industry boss for years. He's a mechanical engineer and loves messing around with oily machines. Jack can fix anything and everything.
So Beth informed us that the Haslams have been married for donkey's years, which we had to Google. And it turns out that there's a bit of interesting history to that phrase, which we don't have time for today. But it basically means a very long time.
Never heard of that.
It's the European, or should I say Wales or English. Welcome to the show, Beth. We understand you're quite an expert on French estates, given you have written a number of books on the subject, albeit maybe of many others, but I know that you're included in there. So tell us how you and Jack decided on making Toulouse, a rural section, your second home.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here. I must correct you, though, because I'm far from an expert. Certainly not. We had wonderful ideas, which all one after the other ended up as disasters. But we did have a plan. The idea was that we wanted to buy a second home in a place with a better climate than our own in the UK. And in an area where land was more affordable than it is in, well, certainly the Midlands area of Britain. So we looked at Spain, we looked at Portugal, and we ruled those out for various reasons, as we did Italy. We have had many holidays over the years in France. We've always loved the country. So we decided that's the area that we wanted to be. In terms of specifics, I had this romantic idea about lavender fields and Provence, which, as you know, is on the southeast portion of France. So the lavender and the gorgeous Riviera and the environment that is so celebrated there. Mm-hmm. So I researched and found several domains, French word for estate, that we should go and visit. I also thought we ought to check other areas along the southern belt of France. So selected a couple more with the help of a gentleman who turned out to be an extremely eccentric estate agent. And we ended up with 13 domains to visit. And that essentially was the subject of the first two books in the Fat Dog series, because we packed up the car with our two aging tubby dogs and set off on our
great
domain
title.
Visit.
Great title.
And for all sorts of different reasons, every single one of my meticulously researched domains ended up in a disaster. I had never, ever thought of the town of Garonne. We didn't even know where it was. And we were at our last domain, which was just so awful. Jack refused to Jack refused to even go. Well, we got to the domain, which was a farmhouse halfway up the mountain. And Jack, who is quite grumpy, was already head out. We got to the front door and the couple was sitting outside in, well, the man was in a hammock, although I couldn't see him because he was so little. He was obscured by the hammock. She was marvelous. She was enormous. She was sitting on a deck chair outside the front door. Mm-hmm. So I walked up and said, look, here we are, ready for the visit. She said, right, come on in. So Jack was with me at that stage. We walked in into her kitchen and the table was a long trestle table filled with filthy pots and pans. And there was a corporal wandering around on it. Jack said, that's it. I'm not going any further. And he walked off. That's far too rude. He just left me with this visit.
No.
Oh my goodness.
He'd had it. So unfortunately, it got worse and worse. By the time I returned, it was actually billed as a spa, and the lady insisted that I go and have a look at this spa, and I had both dogs with me.
Okay.
And it turned out to be a swamp, and one of the little dog hunters.
A swamp?
Biff the terrier thought this was marvellous, and he jumped in it, so he was up to his armpits in mud. I had to pull him out. Oh, it was awful. And one of my boots got stuck in there. It was just awful. Got stuck in the swamp. So I pulled my boot out, pulled out the dog. Dog's loving it. Oh. I eventually walked back, extricated myself from this strange family. The man was still in the hammock when I left. got back to the car and Jack said, it's Will, who we nicknamed our eccentric aristocratic.
Oh, the agent.
He said, it's Will has found us another domain. Shall we even bother with it? And I said, well, look at me. Just look at me. He said, you stink. I said, well, I know I stink. I've just been in a swamp. So we said, okay, we'll do it. So we got in the car. After about an hour, Jack couldn't cope with me any longer. So he had to stop at a service station for me to wash my feet and for me to watch the terrier who really.
Oh, wow. It went through your shoes and boots.
We were worn out. 3 hours later, because actually it's Will had sent us in the wrong direction, but we turned around on the auto route and found our way into Tana at Garonne and turned up at this place. And it was love at first night. It was really strange.
We'll be right back.
I hate talking.
Do you love talking about any topic and are never frustrated during conversations? Then I Hate Talking is not a podcast for you.
But if there are topics that you avoid, then listen to I Hate Talking.
Do you know the definition of every word others use? I Hate Talking is not a podcast for you.
But if you are curious about the definition and historical usage of words, then listen to I Hate Talking.
Do you know about current events and other random topics? Then I Hate Talking is not a podcast for you.
But if you enjoy conversations on a variety of topics, then listen to I Hate Talking.
Listen to I Hate Talking wherever you get your podcasts.
Episodes drop every Thursday. Listen, like, and follow I Hate Talking today.
Wow, I thought you were going to say, regardless, we purchased it and turned it upside down. But no. Okay.
Well, actually, that did happen. But for all the reasons that one might not expect, we were kind of battle hardened after nearly 3 weeks of driving up and down the auto routes across France. Mm-hmm. We really had visited so many different domains, even some that there weren't on my dreadful list. And so we did have some experience by the time we got to this final one. So we kind of knew, and I'm not a believer in love at first sight at all, but there was something so right about this place.
Okay, so this was the last place following that swampy place. And we understand it's close to 400 acres, correct?
Yes, that's right, which definitely wasn't on our specification at all.
Really? But you have a love for animals. Can you tell us why then you purchased such a large property?
One of the things that we did wrong, one of our learning points, was that what we wanted to do was buy a small house with about 50 acres of land, somewhere where I could mess around with nature, take photographs of animals in their natural habitat, walk the dogs. And some are without houses, so Jack could play around with his awful projects, rebuilding machines and doing his engineered thing. It's amazing. We're well matched, but we have extremely dissimilar interests. So while I did my nature thing, that enabled me, okay, I get that. So that enabled Jack and I, that ought to have enabled Jack and I to enjoy both of our pastimes. But what we didn't realize, and it was naive with hindsight, was that normally when one buys land, you get a huge, great big property with it. And that was one of the problems when we visited all of the domains that I had researched. Despite being assured that they only had a couple of bedrooms or three bedrooms, actually, they were enormous. One of them was an old Templar, was actually a castle. Oh, it was fantastic, but it was just vast. Mm-hmm. And I'd been brought up in large houses, and we just wanted a cozy farmhouse. Mm-hmm. So one of the great things about this, our domain now, I can say, was that it had a very cozy little farmhouse. It used to have a cattle shed in it, which was along the years, because it's hundreds of years old, it was converted into a home. What we hadn't bargained for, because during the visit, we began at this just charming, chunky stone farmhouse. And then the owner said, and here's the shell of the 13th century fortification. Okay, we hadn't expected that. So there was a medieval courtyard shell. So we had a look at that. Fascinating. And she said, oh, well, above it, there's a guest apartment. Oh, hadn't expected that. Oh. So we had a look at that. Then she took us to another building, which is the guardian's house. Another learning point. So prominent families who years ago in France who lived on large estates, and particularly in chateaus, would have guardians who were the guardians of the property whilst they were away. And they would typically look after the oversee. It's almost like having a housekeeper. They might look after the catering or handle the staff on the grounds. So they would have a variety of different duties. Anyway, so that property was in existence and we had an idea about that, as was another building which she called an annex. This was basically, I'm looking at it through the window now. Well, it's a single-story building with a carve, and that's a wine cellar below it. And the previous owner had built it because the main house is so small. He was a keen hunter. The main house was too small to entertain his hunting pals. So he had this building, the annex, built to wine and dine for entertainment purposes. So we hadn't actually anticipated that we were viewing a hamlet, but that was that. So we were then shown part, the estate agent who viewed it with us, took us into the forest, a large proportion of which is fenced. It was just a magical experience for us. Mm. Just astonishing.
So that's like a preserve, right? That people cannot build on. The land itself is protected.
This part of it is, yes. Yes, it is. And the other, there are very complex laws regarding rights to roam and rights to hunt here. Another learning point for us, as we subsequently found out, was that within the fenced environment, that was truly private. As the years have gone on, we have basically established it as a conservation area for wildlife, the indigenous species.
So this sounds massive. Are you folks millionaires?
Well, definitely not. The number of times Jack has said this is a money pit, you cannot believe. Each building is very small. So many, many properties in France will have what they call a dependency. People often convert them into gîtes. Have you heard of gîtes?
No.
So there will be a principal home and there's another separate dependency, which is habitable. Lots and lots of properties have them here in France. And it's very popular during vacation time for the French to hire a gîte. And it's quite big business here. So it's a rental. It's a property rental.
Okay. And it's fully standalone. Is there its own bathroom?
They're all different, but it tends to be a habitable property on the footprint of the domain itself.
And how many buildings are there in total on the property?
So we have our main house, which is our tiny two-bedroom farmhouse. The second building is the annex, which was used for the entertainments and soirees. And the third building is essentially a combination of an apartment and the guardian's house. They're one bedroom each. So they sound huge, but they're actually not. Mm-hmm. And they're all built around the wall of the 13th century, the shell, the courtyard's okay. shell.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So well, it sounds enormous, but actually it isn't. But it just seemed to go on. We kept thinking, oh no, not another building.
right, absolutely.
And you were saying you still have your home in the UK. How do you split your time?
The vast majority is spent here. Well, there are two main reasons. First of all, because we love it. And also, for some reason, we seem to have accumulated lots of different animals. We seem to save abandoned animals and look after various animals. So we have responsibilities of that nature.
We did some unscientific research and we found some homes in your area that could be found about 200,000 euros at the low end. Do you find that right? I know it goes up to the millions, obviously, and it really varies. You were saying you saw a home for sale that needed a lot of work. And how much was that?
Can you tell us about that?
Well, that property was that came in, I think it was about 100,000 or 130,000 euros. It vastly depends on the sort of property it is and how much renovation it needs. What has tended to happen, certainly in our rural environment, we really do live in a very countrified area, is that over the years, families have been brought up and lived in the same large farmhouse. There may be some old buildings, habitable buildings on their farms. And if they're sold off, sometimes they're sold for a song for a good price. But it really does depend on how much work that's required. But one of the things we learned when we came here was that to find some of these gems, they're often not very well advertised. But to discover where some of these gems might lie, it's always worthwhile going along to the local Mary, which is the local village town hall, who tend to know about the sort of properties that might be available soon or have just become available.
And that's public information that they just dispense, right?
Yes. I mean, there might be a farmer who's saying, oh, I might be interested in selling. I'm not sure, might do. So they may have a chat and say, look, we have a buyer who's keen here. Obviously, it has to go through the proper channels and there has to be a formal evaluation of the property. But that is a way of finding properties sometimes which haven't reached the market yet.
Oh, very nice.
Well, that's certainly vary.
That's great information. And how would you compare the prices of countryside real estate in France versus countryside real estate in the UK?
I'm certainly not an expert on numbers, but in our experience, one of the reasons that we decided to buy in France was that we knew, not that we expected to buy so much land, but we knew it would be far cheaper to buy them in a rural area of France than it would in the UK.
And earlier you had mentioned that pound for pound, you'll get much more in France in the rural area even.
That's my opinion. I do think people need to research this for themselves.
Of course,
of course. That was one of the reasons that we decided to come here. Also, climate was really important to us. We do benefit from lots of rain in the UK, or certainly in our area of the UK. Scotland, we found incredibly appealing, but it's just not the kind of weather for us. It suits lots of people, just not us.
People always think, oh, France is so expensive. But I think the thing about Paris, I've heard time and time again, once people get into the rural areas, it's really reasonable. Don't necessarily take France out of the equation when you're looking for property in Europe, I would say.
Yes.
Oh, that's absolutely right. There's no doubt that the cost of living is going up. But life down here is, it's like living like any big city. Paris is really expensive. Toulouse is expensive. Mm-hmm. But where we are in the depths of the countryside, it's a lot cheaper.
So can you share with us, in terms of cost of living, do you make your regular purchases nearby, locally, and so forth?
Yes, definitely. Another thing that you'll find, certainly in the southern portion of France, is that there's a strong market culture. You have to imagine, one of the things I said, I think, in the early books anyway, was that it felt a little bit like stepping back in time coming here, stepping back maybe 50 years. We have friends who don't drive, not because they're not capable of driving, but because they've never felt the need. And they come from an environment where the markets provided all of the produce that they needed, if not their own. Most people that we know here have their own chickens. They have their own potager, which is a vegetable garden. So they might have their own beasts, but they might, you know, cattle. They might have a cow or something. So, but here you will find many villages and most towns will have a weekly market. And for hours, they sell cheese. Big in France, cheese. They love it. cheese, fruit, vegetables, meats, wines, different, they'll sell clothes sometimes. And they're a real hub. These are the places where locals go. They'll have a chat, they'll have a gossip, and they'll pick up produce which is far cheaper than you would be able to buy in a supermarket. The exception to that are the artisan producers, which tend to be specialist producers. And I fell foul of that once. One of the local towns, well, it's not one of the closer towns to us is an ancient abbey town called Moissac, and they have a lovely market there with lots of artisan producers. And I was tasting cheeses at one artisan producer one day, and I was just beguiled by this wonderful thing. I bought a chunk of it, and it cost, I think, about 35 euros, and it was just a really small chunk. Oh, ask for the brightest bird.
Yes, that's same here. Anything that has the word artisanal or artisanal. Yes, it's by law, I think, permitted to increase it by tenfold.
We also have, I don't know whether it's helpful to say, but we also have some of the more remote villages. We have a traveling butcher. He used to come to our home, which is really sweet. He used to come in his lorry and he used to pull down, you can imagine the canopy and fold out of fairs and with all of his meats on display. So he goes to, he just drives around the area once a week and flies to locals. So they'll line up from the villages and buy their sausages and whatever. It's the same with the bread man. So we have a boulanger who does that. And some of the village will also have a vegetable supplier. So it's good.
Yeah, I'm curious. What about fish? Are there fishmongers that come around or?
Yes, every Friday here outside our closest town, which is about 15 minutes drive away. Outside we have a mini supermarket there and it's very mini. So we'll have, it's like a pop-up store, fishmonger. And I think he gets his supplies from Bordeaux in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Really early.
He drives over
and the fish is excellent.
Wow. Wonderful. And the prices are fair?
They're fair. It's difficult to give you, I wish I'd got some recent prices. No, they're fair they're, because it's good quality.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. This sounds very dreamy so far.
Well, it's a different way of life, you know, not convenient for everybody, but we enjoy it. We love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I forgot to mention, in the UK, are you in a rural area or more urban?
Well, we're in a rural village. We're never far from an urban environment.
So the prices do differ between where you are, obviously, and back home.
They do, but I would say that supermarket prices here are starting to go up. It's a while since I bought weekly supplies from our local supermarket in the UK, but I don't think there'll be a vast difference. The markets are really where the differences are.
So you had mentioned that Jack, your husband, is still working part-time. Does he commute or does he work remotely?
His business activities, which are much curtailed now, those are remotely managed.
Because otherwise he'd have to go to the UK. Where is the nearest international airport?
There's one in Agen, but for us, it's Blagnac in Toulouse.
Okay, so that's the main airport.
Yeah, it's a great little airport.
Yeah, and how long is that drive about?
For us, it's about an hour and 15 minutes drive. But actually, it's not at all arduous because the auto routes here, yes, it's more expensive because they're toll roads, but the auto routes are a joy.
So I assume you don't drive to the airport and leave your car, but you hire Uber or some service.
No, I leave the car at the airport.
Oh, you do?
Or Jack will take me. If I'm going over to see family, he'll either drop me off at the airport or I'll leave the car, but that's more expensive.
Since you spend most of your time in France, what is the healthcare like? Was that a consideration of moving to your location?
Not a primary one, though it was important that we had competent healthcare, yes. And France has a reputation for having just that. So we have what is called a carte vitale, which entitles us to receive healthcare in France. And every time we go and see the doctor, for example, we'll pay €25. And if, for example, we're given a prescription for antibiotics, say, we will be given what's called an ordonnance, which is the prescription, and we take that to the pharmacy and the tablets will be free of charge.
Very nice.
Because that's all part of the carte vitale process.
Which is the French healthcare system, I assume, right?
Yes, yes.
And you had to live there how long, or is it immediate?
It was up to us to apply for that, and Jack did. He handled all of that and managed it for us straight away. But I would say for anybody who was interested in living out here, that it's a good process to follow. And it's quite simple. It's very well documented.
So are you residents of France?
We have what's called a titre de séjour, which is an entitlement to reside here. There are lots of different levels, but that's what we have. A right to remain.
Oh, and did you get that before Brexit, or does Brexit have nothing to do with it?
No, we got that after Brexit.
So that's nice. And what is the requirement? Is there a financial level of criteria?
I don't think so. No, you'd have to check the
rules. And is there a hospital nearby?
Yes, there's one in Moissac, which is about half an hour's drive away. So it pays not to get ill. Or we have a forester who's just wonderful. So he looks after the forest. That was another thing we hadn't anticipated on inheriting an employee. Anyway, we got one and he's marvelous. But poor Nathan, he had a horrible injury on his thumb a while ago. So I rushed him to hospital, and poor Nathan, he's got sort of an enormous bandage, several towels around his thumb, which is just dripping, poor chap. Oh. So I rushed him to hospital. And this is how I know about it. It's urgence, it's called there, A&E, if you like, the accident and emergency thing. Mm-hmm. I took him there and he was really quite shocked, understandably, because he had a horrid injury. I took him there intent on stopping and taking him in to make sure that he was correctly registered. But no, I wasn't allowed in with him. So I said, why not? And the security guard said, no, one person in only. And it was actually a throwback from the COVID regulation. I'm still not quite sure, still unclear as to why I wasn't allowed to go in with him. But anyway, it's a lovely little hospital. I do know that. And he was cared for very well.
And is there a clinic near you?
You know, if you weren't feeling well one morning, but you weren't quite sure, how would you approach that?
The local doctor's clinic is about 10 minutes drive from us.
So
very good.
But do you have a regular, what we call primary care physician?
Yes, we do. Everybody is, if you register at your local clinic, as it were, your local doctor's surgery, one is allocated a doctor. And for example, if somebody is ill and needing ongoing care in the home, the practice nurses will come out and care for that person.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
It's very good. And a friend of mine's husband unfortunately passed away fairly recently, and they had, it was something like, it's called something like hospital a domicile. So it was, they convert a bedroom into a hospital environment in the home when the person is nearing end of life.
Oh,
so they receive all of their care in their own home rather than have to go through that experience in a hospital, which is so much nicer for the family.
Mm-hmm. It was absolutely.
It is actually. It's very impressive, and the nurses are absolutely wonderful.
And so you use the government healthcare program, so you don't have private health insurance at all in France?
Yes, we do. There are public hospitals and private clinics. So we pay an insurance, a private insurance for that.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's hugely varied in terms of what one might pay. But yes, that's what we do.
Are there any things that you miss about the UK where you, in, you know, where you are? I mean, you're busy, it sounds, and you were once a busy HR executive, and now you're writing books in the country. Is your lifestyle quite different, and do you miss it?
It is very different, but... And there are things, one of the things I miss is not having the family so close. So the kids are still in the UK. Luckily, one of the great things about having the airport in Toulouse is that it really is just so easy to pop over to London and get together with family and friends. But inevitably, that is a trip. So that's a compromise. But it's also a great excuse for them to come over here and have holidays with us. So, and there are silly things like if I... On the days where I'm fed up with cooking, had a long day, I really could do with a takeaway. That really doesn't happen here. You can't just call up for a pizza. You have to, our closest, we have an auberge restaurant, if you like it. It's like a country. It's actually very close. It's only about 3 kilometers away. Oh. But it's not quite the same as just relaxing and having a delivery to your house. So
sure. Yes. And what is the cost of a meal at such a place?
Oh, again, it really varies. These auberges, they will do often a great deal, and they're aimed at the farm workers.
Yes.
And also holidaymakers. We're not in a tourist trap environment. We're in a farm community. So they will do something like a starter, a main course, and a dessert with a glass of wine and a coffee for 18 euros.
Wow.
Oh, nice.
That's yeah. very nice.
Some will be 13, some might be 20. It really depends on where you are, but they do offer reasonable deals.
Right.
And you talked about your children. What do your children think about you moving to France?
Oh, they're really supportive. They're great. Because it's given me an opportunity to go back, in a sense, to my roots where I was born and brought up with lots of animals. They love, and they, you know, it's great for them to come out. So it's worked out really well, and they're grown up. So yeah. It's worked really well.
And it's not the other end of the world. I mean, how
long? Yeah, it's not that far.
Yeah, the flight is very short, right? What is the flight?
It's so easy. It's great.
Okay.
Weather.
Yes. So let's talk a bit about the weather, and it's quite different from the rainy likes of the UK. Can you tell us year round how cold does it get or how hot does it get?
It really can change. And poor UK, I mean, we can get fabulous weather in the UK,
right.
But I think what attracted us was the reliability, if you like, the weather here. Hmm. It is changing. When we first came, winters would be really, really quite cold. Never that much snow, but it could get bitterly cold. Hmm. This year, for example, we've been down to -8 on a handful of days. It's been fairly mild. It tends to be pretty wet intermittently into coming up from now into the spring. Then during the summer, it's June through to October, it's pretty hot. So we will have days that go into the low 40s. So that's very hot. But
right. I think that's over 100 in Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
But that's Celsius, yes. Right? Obviously. Yes. Okay.
We will regularly be in the 30s, low 30s. Here in the summer. And that makes for outdoor living, outdoor eating.
Sure.
And it's kind of t-shirts and shorts from, well, it can be any time from May through to beginning of October, which great lifestyle. If you like that sort of thing, it suits
yes,
us.
Yes, of course.
But well, it does
like
mean
sunshine.
Yeah. Well, I know.
I mean, I am hoping because we don't get much sun or we're not facing the south, our current home, but I would love to just have the exposure for as long however many hours that I can get, because it also uplifts, you know, your day. It just makes life so much happier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's that feel good factor, isn't it? It's
yes.
It's just invigorating.
Yes.
It can be very sapping, but those blue skies,
yes, there's nothing.
The ability to what you want outside and to relax in that environment is just lovely. We feel very privileged.
I'll bet. Okay. So I think we've discussed quite a bit, and we so appreciate, I feel like I am there with you, and I need sunshine right now hitting my face.
Well,
especially when you're down.
You would enjoy it.
Absolutely. Okay, so tell us about the series of books that you have written. Give us a bit of a flavor for our audience.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. The first two books really documented, they're almost like a diarized account of each of the domains we visited. I mean, I had no intention of writing any books until it became apparent that one after the other, they were unmitigating disasters for very different reasons. Uh-huh. And eventually Jack said, you know, this is just so ridiculous. People would never believe this. Why didn't you write a book about it? So I did. And that's how the series started. So the first two books really documented each of the adventures we had. The second book ends with us arriving at our home, Le Palisade. There is a shop when we come to buy the property, which is completely unforeseen. And book three documents that and how we deal with it. Fourth book, it tells about our lives settling into the community.
That's nice.
And we just, you know, we are étranger, we are anglaise. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, so we're very, very aware of the fact that we are foreigners who've come in and had the privilege of becoming part of this domain's history.
Right.
So we see ourselves very much as custodians of it. And so integrating, we tried hard to integrate into a society feeling quite, I certainly felt quite sensitive mm-hmm. about that. And yet, you know, people here have been so kind to us, so welcoming. And book four is really all about that. And we have a key event, which is another dreadful storm that hit much of France.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost thousands of trees, and the support we had from local villages and the community was just extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
So book four tells about that, and book five talks about places we start visiting,
mm-hmm.
and also the two animals that have been abandoned that we've looked after,
mm-hmm.
an idea that we had to introduce a particular species of pheasant to live in our forest, just to not to shoot, to naturalize and to be in a secure habitat.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk about that
mm-hmm.
and the two new puppies, Australian Shepherd puppies that join our family.
So now, do the two of you, I read somewhere that you speak a little French. In your rural area, do people speak English or is it mostly French? And do you need to know French?
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah. Our French is awful. Well, at least my French is terrible. Jack's is better. In this environment, if I tell you that many of the people we know have never traveled outside of the Tarn-et-Garonne, let alone France, so many people here don't speak a word of English. And why should they?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, from our point of view, we felt that if we were wanting to come and live in France, it was only polite. We were obliged to learn mm-hmm. French. I mean, it's the very least we could do
right.
to learn the language. And so part because we had to anyway, we already had a smattering of French, but we're trying our best all the time and we're learning all the time.
Right, right. You are, what they say, fully immersed. So you have to, it becomes a daily existence, I suppose.
Yes, that's right. And I must say the French here are very, very long suffering with our awful French, or certainly my awful French. I'm very good at charades, very good at arm waving. It's a really bad habit. If I've decided that there might be an English word that sounds French, I'll say it with a French accent and I'll have dog walking friends who are saying, no, there. I can write.
Okay.
So I'll have another go.
So right around your area, so to speak, are there many expats or no?
No, there really aren't.
Okay.
And for us, it's a plus because we wanted to seek out the French culture. Again, it's not for everyone.
Right,
I do respect that entirely. But for us, we wanted to live among French people.
Okay.
And we love doing so.
Yeah, no, that makes all the sense in the world.
Talk about your books. I just want to remind people, you didn't say the series title. The series title is Fat Dogs and French Estates. Just want to make that clear.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Very nice.
You have to promote.
We had two dogs, which they were fairly aged at the time when we started our journey, our adventure,
mm-hmm.
and they were a bit portly. So that kind of worked.
That's how I describe myself, Portland.
Oh, yeah, you're not alone. Try living here with the patisseries and the cheeses.
No.
It's challenging. So, yes, that along with the fact that we were visiting these domains, which essentially are estates, that's how the title came to be.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. So, Beth, as we wrap up, any words of wisdom you would like to share with our audience?
Oh, gosh, I don't feel qualified to...
Anything. Come on.
Wisdom, no. Tell you what not to do. Lots of loathing. What I would say is anybody who's interested in either moving permanently or spending a large proportion of their time in a different country, I would suggest that they rent first. I do think that is wise advice, because visiting a place is entirely different to living in a place. And you need to have an awareness of the microcultures, the microclimates. You need to understand whether it's okay for you to have to travel nearly 2 hours to get to an airport. Is it all right for you to have to drive for nearly half an hour to get to your local supermarket? Or will that not suit? It really, everyone has such different needs that I would really suggest that's a wise thing to do.
That's great advice, but you didn't do that, right?
Well, no. However, in my defense, we did spend an awful lot. Years and years and years, and we did spend 3 weeks solidly trawling up and down. Having said that, you're right. Tarnagaron was an unknown quantity. So, but what seemed to, life is compromised, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
What worked for us was property itself. Far too big, far too many buildings, but there were just elements to it that we just love. We went away and we did some rapid research. The climate boxes were ticked. The travel boxes were ticked. We wanted to live in the countrified environment, so we were familiar with that. Mm-hmm. So yes, we took a chance and it was a good chance. It worked out.
Oh,
that's a great story.
That's such a wonderful, wonderful summary. Thank you, Beth. You're lovely.
Thank you. Honestly, it's such a joy to chat to you. You're so kind. But really, we're just really very lucky to live here surrounded by our animals.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's great.
Really,
yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for your time.
And
we will stay in touch.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you know someone who's relocated for retirement and wishes to share their story with us, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is gg@retirethere.com. Our website is retirethere.com, and you may follow us on Twitter @retirethere_. Now, if you've liked our show, please subscribe and rate it in Apple Podcasts. In the meantime, be well.